is Christina, and thank you for checking into the Home for Weird OCs. This is a podcast where a friend and I talk about our original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. And guest, would you like to introduce yourself? Name, pronouns, whatever you want.
Hello, I'm Raina. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm a ghost that exists on the internet.
I mean, you are a real person. You are a real living person. But you have made the wise decision to not publicly discuss where you would like to be found on the internet, which I think is a brave and admirable decision.
I mean, it's more that I just don't post anywhere that is actually public, so mm-hmm. there's really nothing to find yet. Asterisk. Someday yes. I might launch my own podcast, and I assume there's a time at the end of the show to plug those sorts of things.
Yes, there will be. There will be time.
Yeah.
But we are not here today to talk about social media. At least that'll be it. That'll be the end of the show. But we are here today to talk about your OC, and who have you brought today?
I'm here to talk about my OC, who is named Sarah Kiley, and who has existed with me for more than a decade.
Nice, we got a long runner.
Yeah.
So, where would you like to start with Sarah? Would you like to mention what she looks like, or how you came up with her, which I know is going to be an epic and wonderful tale?
So, yeah, I think that the best place to begin is the beginning. I tricked you. We are talking about social media now. We're talking about old school social media web forums.
Ah.
Because when I was in my mid-teens, I existed primarily on the internet in web forums, which for the younger listeners out there, you used to like talk about websites on the websites themselves instead of joining like an official Discord or an unofficial Discord or whatever.
Or Tumblr or...
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, Substack? Do people still use Substack? I mean, hopefully not, because isn't that a very fascist platform now?
Maybe. A Mastodon instance. But
there you go.
No, the internet used to exist in a very fragmented way where each website would have like its own place to discuss, and there would be like communities on specific websites instead of everything being on huge platforms. And when I was a teenager, I existed on the forums of a webcomic that I'm not going to name here, because if I do, you could find my posts from 12 years ago, and I don't want that to happen.
May I guess?
Okay.
Actually, may I have a little bit more context, and I'll cut it, obviously.
I mean, you don't have to cut it. I'm going to be saying her name, and I know for a fact that if you Google her name, the forum is the first result. So I will give you one hint. It is a Dungeons and Dragons webcomic.
Order of the Stick?
Correct.
Hey!
I roleplayed on the Giant in the Playground forums as a teenager. And that is where Sarah was born.
Nice.
Sarah started off as the baby sister of my self-insert OC in the freeform roleplaying forums on giantintheplayground.com.
Okay. And I feel like I should provide some extra context here, which is I was never on I was only ever on one forum. I was on, unsurprisingly, the Glee forum, which is where you talked about the TV show Glee. But even then, I mostly did episode discussion, and I didn't do any play by post until like 2 years ago. So maybe 3 years ago. So, but I did follow a couple of other forums that had, like, roleplay on them. So, I have an awareness, but I don't have any experience of it.
I mean, it... for freeform roleplay, mm-hmm. which is what I was doing, it's basically just like it's just collaborative storytelling. It's
okay,
just
okay.
There aren't really any rules. The one rule was that you don't get to dictate what other characters do and what their reactions are to the things that you're doing, because that's the other person's job.
Yeah, that seems pretty standard.
Yeah, but aside from that, there aren't really any rules. So Sarah was born in this environment as the 5-year-old younger sister of my self-insert OC, who was introduced in a plot where my self-insert had died and gone to heaven in their own world and discovered that their dead parents had more children while in heaven.
Oh my.
Yeah. It was a thing. You know, it's the sort of plot that a 16-year-old with a baby sister would write.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time, she was vaguely modeled on my actual baby sister, because that's what you do when you have a self-insert. You model their family after your family.
Absolutely. Can confirm from experience.
Yeah. But after that plot happened, where she was introduced, she was brought back to the main setting of the freeform roleplay with her older brother, and was essentially student adopted, taken on as an apprentice by one of my at the time friends to learn magic, and got involved in a lot of plots that ended up shaping what her future would be, basically every time I played her in the future.
Okay.
She started off just like little baby.
Mm-hmm.
Almost nothing about her was defined. But mm-hmm. through the freeform roleplay collaborative process, she got taught chromomancy, color magic.
Okay.
By a friend of mine. It was defined that she was essentially she was raised by her parents to be an all-rounder. She learned archery and close combat and blah, blah, blah. And basically, like, all types of warfare from her dad, who was a general in the armies of heaven, because, you know,
yeah,
self-insert
sure.
OC.
Yeah,
all that
not?
Stuff. She learned warfare from her dad, and she learned scholarship from her mom. Mm-hmm. And those, like, three things together are the things that kind of came to define her later on.
Okay.
But eventually, I stopped posting on forums. I grew up, I started cringing, and, you know, all the things that happen, usually, as you grow out of your teens. But I still really loved Sarah and loved the person that she was shaping up to be. So going forward from that point, for reasons.
Yes, reasons.
She became the character that, like, whenever I was playing a video game or whatever, she was my default character. Like, if I don't want to think too hard, I would just slip into making Sarah and playing as Sarah in any mm-hmm. video game mm-hmm. or D&D or whatever. For reasons being, you know, realizing that I wasn't really identifying with my self-insert anymore. Because transgender.
Yay!
Yay. Later in my life, I moved to a different web forum.
Mm-hmm.
And I was joining tabletop games and playing in tabletop games. And mm-hmm. I joined a 13th Age game where I played as Sarah. And I have an illustration of the Sarah from that game. This D&D game kind of defined what, like, the default Sarah was, which is that mm-hmm. because she's the character that I jump into when I don't have the motivation to, like, make a character that actually fits into the setting that I'm in, Sarah is normally explicitly a fish out of water. I normally start her in the campaign with her falling from heaven, falling from the afterlife, having like almost no knowledge of whatever the material plane is, because it's an easy place to start with me as a player being like, okay, I will learn along with my character what's actually happening here. That's a really useful tool to have. And so she will almost always start literally falling from heaven.
Yeah.
Just like complete outsider to whatever is happening in the real world because she's been removed from it. And her default starting point, someone in the campaign that I was playing Sarah in described her derisively as a Pollyanna. And I didn't at the time know what that word meant.
Yeah.
And then I looked it up and I was like, how is this an insult?
Yeah. Real quick, for listeners who maybe have not had their minds poisoned by TVTropes.org like I have, Pollyanna is the trope referring to like someone who is a bright and happy and smiley optimist who always thinks that everything is going to turn out okay.
Yeah. It comes from a 1960s film called Pollyanna. There's a lot of stuff about it. If you're into anime, it's the Genki girl archetype.
Yes.
There's also an Earthbound song about it that makes me cry when I listen to it, but that's neither here nor there. I cry at a lot of things.
Yeah.
This specific iteration of Sarah is important for many reasons. One is that it is where like her design principles got hammered down because I got the commission, which I linked to Christina and I assume will be linked in the episode notes or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like where she first had a solid design, which is to describe it for people who don't want to go look. She has mid-length blonde hair that is usually done up out of her face. And is wearing a mixture of baggy clothing and chainmail to for protection and to allow her to move around and move freely, because her whole thing is being acrobatic and being agile while using her bow and having the ability to switch somehow to close combat. A lot of the time she ends up using big axes, which is fun because she is 4'10". That is the other consistent aspect of Sarah, is that she is short.
Nice.
She is very small. Small package, but she packs a punch. She wears a lot of blues and pinks.
Purples, yeah.
The purples have faded as time goes on.
Okay.
But it's mostly blues and pinks due to a design aspect that we will talk about later.
Okay. And I would like to specifically mention that in this first image that Raina has shared here, there is a stack of what is identified as medieval soda coming in many different colors and with a lid that is held on by a wire coil, which I imagine similar to a champagne bottle. So you can have your medieval soda.
Yeah. That was a thing in that campaign. A joke with Sarah a lot of the time is I like to say that the afterlife of whatever like Dungeons & Dragons fantasy setting she's in is just like 2000s middle America. It's just like suburbia.
Nice.
So she will try to recreate the trappings of just like suburbia in the setting that she gets to. And in this specific campaign, she invented medieval soda, which could also be used as a weapon because it was potions and weird things and it was carbonated. And if you shook it up too much, it would explode.
So what is the, aside from Sarah's visual appearance being really set in this campaign, what would you say is the other thing, or what would you say is one other thing that really got locked in this game?
The other thing that really got locked in this game, like the very simple one, is that this is where Sarah got her canonical name. Because before, she was named after my screen name on the Giant in the Playground forums.
Yeah.
And after that, she was, that from then on, always Sarah Kylie, S-A-E-R-A-K-E-I-L-L-E-Y. That's the simple one. The other thing is, like I talked about, it locked in her, like, fish out of water status, and, like, the way that things happen, comma, also the fact that she's an adult now. Whenever I play her, she doesn't appear as a 5-year-old anymore. So, like,
yeah.
True fish out of water, doesn't know anything, not like little baby who shouldn't know anything anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the other important thing about that first forums game that I played Sarah in is that it did lead to me meeting my girlfriend.
Hey!
Through a very convoluted series of things.
Yeah.
Because I was playing in that game, mm-hmm. and myself and one of the other players from that game applied to be in another person's game.
Yeah.
On the forum. And we were both rejected, and we were so
sad,
het up about it.
Yeah.
That we just reached out to every other person who got their applications rejected, because it was for like a 6-person campaign and like 12 people got rejected.
Holy cow.
We just reached out to them and said, you want to have our own campaign? We'll run a campaign with this same premise.
Uh-huh.
My girlfriend was not one of those people that we invited. about a year and a half later, after some people had shuffled out, one of the members of the party suggested that we add my girlfriend to the party to replace one of the people who had left, not my girlfriend at the time. And then we got to talking, and a lot of drama happened. But long story short, we've now been together for almost 8 years.
Aw, yay!
Yeah.
Evidence that forums can be good things sometimes.
Sometimes. The drama also came from those forums, and that drama sucked, but this is not the appropriate place to talk about it.
Yeah, fair. For that, we'd have to go get something a little bit stronger than coffee and or water.
Yeah. The reason why it's important that I met my girlfriend here mm-hmm. is that later, the version of Sarah that we're going to spend the bulk of the time talking about here was brought into existence because
mm-hmm.
my girlfriend is still a very avid player of MUDs, or multi-user dungeons.
Okay.
And Christina, do you know what a multi-user dungeon is?
I have heard the term, but I have no awareness of what it stands for. Or what the significance of a multi-user dungeon.
So it is, they're the precursor to MMORPGs. They are fully text-based. They're essentially fully text-based MMORPGs.
Okay.
They were somewhat big in like the 90s.
Okay.
And they are strange. Because they're fully text-based, they can be basically anything. Mm-hmm. And they can be huge games to explore in and to roleplay in. And my girlfriend got me into a MUD called Retro MUD, which Retro is correct. It is older than I am. I was born in 1994, and Retro MUD started in 1994 before I was born.
Oh, I love when it's like, oh, hey, this very important thing started within months of me being born.
Yeah.
It's just so like, hey, I'm just, oh, how old am I? I'm as old as XYZ.
Yeah, it's like, I like to say that I have never existed in a world that didn't have Power Rangers in it.
Same. Well, mostly same. Almost same.
Power Rangers is about a year older than I am. So Callie had played Retromud for a few months. Mm-hmm. We were together. I had been resistant to playing it, and then I visited her for the first time in September of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were together, she finally convinced me to start playing Retromud with her, and I made a character that was not Sarah.
Oh.
And I played that character for a little while, and I liked that character that I made, but I kind of wasn't feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I didn't want to make Sarah in that game was that in that game, Heaven is just a place you can go to. There is an area called Elysium, and it is so easily accessible that it is like one of the early game. You can farm here forever when you're like just starting sort of areas.
Gotcha.
So like everyone can be there. Everyone can go there. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really do the fish out of water thing.
Yeah, because it's all the same pond.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be a fish out of water if the water is everything.
Yes. And the other factor that made me hesitant to play Sarah in mm-hmm. Retromud was that Anakim, which is the half-angel race, you know, based on the biblical Anakim, blah, 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 blah. Their minimum age in the game was 100 years old.
And that's not like, I have to imagine that's not like how it is with like elves in D&D 5e, where it's like, hey, you might be 100 years old, but it's just because you age so much more slowly than everyone else does. And you're actually like 20 or whatever.
It is, but every race ages on like a different time scale in Retromud.
Okay.
So 100 years is still 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that Anakim are considered to have reached maturity at 100 years, and they have a lifespan of 777 years. So it's not like elves in D&D where they are essentially ageless, like they can't die of old age. Mm-hmm. There is a time frame in which Anakim can live and die, and it's less than the extremely long-lived race. It's weirdly in the middle.
Gotcha, okay.
But so if I wanted to play Sarah, because it is a game where people like roleplay and people somewhat take all of the roleplay seriously and want you to like fit into the setting.
Okay.
So if I was going to play Sarah, I would need to rework her to not be her usual self mm-hmm. in Retromud. But after I played for a few weeks and I was like, I like how this game plays, but I want to have a character. I want to have a character that I don't have to think to play. That yeah. I can just slip into and just like wear as a hat whenever I need to. So I figured out how to rework Sarah to fit into Retromud.
Mm-hmm.
And just because of the differences in the setting, Sarah ended up as a very different character. Because, like, I can't wrap my head around someone who is 100 years old acting like a young person, mm-hmm. even if that is, like, young for their race.
Gotcha, yeah.
So In retro, Sarah was a lot more mature than she normally is,
mm-hmm.
and also a lot sadder.
Yeah.
I gave her a tragic backstory specifically mm-hmm. to try and prevent the thing that ended up happening from happening.
Oh, no.
So I went into it and I was like, okay, if I'm playing retro with my girlfriend, I don't want to be the couple that always has to have their characters get together.
Yeah.
and be romantically involved. So my first character was like very young and immature and like and part of a race that is literally sexless. They're just little rock people. Mm-hmm. So I was like, this character will never be romantically involved with anyone.
Yeah.
And then I made Sarah, and I made Sarah to have a backstory that was tied in with Callie's character, Leonia, who mm-hmm. was a Dampier. And Dampier in Retro Mud are the shortest lived race. Their expected lifespan is 18 years.
Holy cow.
They reach maturity at 12 and are expected to die at 18.
That's grim.
Yeah. There are ways to slow aging and reverse aging in the setting that allow you to live past what your physical age would be. Mm-hmm. But no, the Dampier age live and die very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with a backstory for Sarah, which was that during the 100 years that she lived, rather than it taking Anakim 100 years to reach maturity,
mm-hmm.
the idea was that it takes 100 years for you to be considered by Anakim society as an adult. You spend like 20 years growing up, and then you spend 80 years doing like community service projects and going out and learning things about the world before you're allowed to actually venture out and like become an adventurer or do whatever without being under supervision, was the
mm-hmm.
explanation that I came up with to reconcile this you reach maturity at 100 years thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
That it's not a physical maturity thing, it's an emotional maturity, life experience thing that is cultural.
Mm-hmm.
And so a big aspect of Sarah's backstory was that she had known a previous version of Leonia.
Okay.
Callie's character.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Who is my girlfriend's character. And she had fallen in love with this previous version of Leonia, who was a tragic character, who was so depressed that at the end of her life, she just went out into a field and waited to die.
Oh my.
Yeah. Which was a reflection that when Callie first made Leonia, she made her as a psionicist, which was a class that basically just like couldn't do anything on their own. And Callie did not like having to be reliant on being in a party to be able to play the character.
Mm, okay.
She was also like edgy and like the traditional Dampier, the like half vampire angst, whatever stuff. So the backstory was that Sarah had known this version of Leonia. So when she met new Leonia and she was so different,
mm-hmm.
it would stop them from trying to get together.
Oh, no.
That didn't work.
Yeah.
That didn't work at all. Callie and I both tried our hardest to not have Sarah and Leonia get together.
Yeah.
Within, like, 2 months, things had progressed to the point where other characters in the game forced a wedding on them.
Other people
were like, y'all just need to stop. We are throwing you a wedding party right now and you're getting married.
This is a wedding intervention.
Yes. And that is where my actual Discord profile picture comes in.
Yeah.
So they exchanged these sapphire necklaces.
Aww.
That are present on all of the images of Sarah and Leonia.
Aww.
And that is what caused like the purples in Sarah's outfit to kind of disappear, because mm-hmm. now she's blues and browns to not have too many things going on all at once, and to match aesthetically with her wife, who we didn't want that to happen, but the characters said No, it's happening. It took like 2 weeks before it broke down and they were together. And then, yeah, like within 2 months, there was a lavish wedding party thrown with all of the friends we had made in the with all of the friends that we had made in the game.
Aww.
Attending.
Aww.
Yeah, it was very cute. It also was part of the big story of Sarah, which is that Sarah and Leonia became like the power couple of Retromud. And yeah. Callie and I organized groups to do every single endgame thing you could possibly do in the game that everyone said you had to be max level for. You had to be remortal, which meant in the game you could get to max level. And then you could reincarnate back to level 10 as a super-powered race that has more abilities than the other races, but levels at half the speed.
Okay.
And they can get 10 more levels than everyone else. And there's a lot of endgame content that, like, the common knowledge of the game was, like, you have to be full-level remortal to be able to approach this.
Okay.
But Sarah and Leonia's career started with taking on a dungeon that had not been completed in over a decade because we heard that it hadn't been completed in over a decade.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
So we jumped through hoops.
Sarah
had to explore 60% of the entire game to get into the class that she needed to get into so that we could beat Genesis, this dungeon that... this dungeon that people hadn't beaten in over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
I was unemployed at the time.
Yeah.
So this took me 2 weeks of playing for literally 8 hours a day to accomplish. In the process of doing it, I had to move mountains. Because I explored every area that was actual... I explored every area that was actually available to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that you could get to in the game without getting killed by monsters or blocked by monsters. And doing that got me to 54% exploration.
Holy cow.
So I had to start calling in favors from people just being like, hey, can you kill the guards outside of this castle so that I can, I can get in and just explore?
Oh my god.
But yeah, that's mechanics stuff, though. It's not really character stuff. It is a fun story to tell. Mm-hmm. But we're here to talk about character stuff.
Yes, character stuff.
Not talking exclusively about the mechanics of this game that I cannot in good faith recommend that anyone plays. So, like I said, Sarah in Retromud ended up as a very different character. Ended up as a very different character than Sarah normally is.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a way that made her much easier for me to just exist as. And Retromud was not RP enforced, but it was RP encouraged.
Gotcha, okay.
What I mean by that is that a lot, if you get into MUDs, a lot of them actually do like have rules that say you have to be in character 100% of the time. I could never play one of those. My girlfriend really wants me to play the one that she is currently working on, but it takes so many spoons. It takes so many spoons to do that.
Yeah.
But Retromud, not RP enforced, yes, RP encouraged. It meant that I got to spend a lot of time in the brain of this version of Sarah, especially because at the time when I was first starting and first playing, not only was I unemployed, but I was also, Callie and I were also long distance. So this was like the primary way that we would interact with each other.
Yeah.
And it was the primary way that I was getting, like, socialization at all, which online spaces, being able to get socialization even when you're isolated, say when you're a trans girl, in her early 20s from small town Ohio, who has mm-hmm. no job and is living with her conservative dad.
Yeah.
It is both a blessing and a curse. So I spent mm-hmm. a lot of time in this time period in Sarah's head and existing as this more mature but also more jaded version of Sarah.
Yeah.
And it was therapeutic in a lot of ways, and it really changed the way that I think about Sarah as a character and the ways that I can use her mm-hmm. and insert her into places, because now I had experience not only being the little fish out of water, but being this actual more fleshed out and dimensional being.
Yeah.
There are a couple of stories that I like to talk about from my time role playing as Sarah. One of them is a little gross.
Let's hear it, and if it's something that's not that's a little bit too gross for my word, then we can talk about it.
Yeah. It's a thing that I wrote about in the questionnaire. But one of the earliest things that happened with Sarah that really cemented her character
in retro. Yeah.
Was that so one day after we were done actually playing the game and just hanging out and chatting in character, my friend decided to roleplay her character getting really drunk and then tried to initiate incredibly awkward ERP with the other player's dragon character, which went from really awkward to actually distressing after the game decided to make my friend's character throw up from being so drunk, and the dragon started threatening her with severe violence. And the way that this scene ended was with Sarah stepping in and being no, none of this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs to just stop what's happening here.
Yeah.
And let's not do this.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Safety is important.
Yeah. It was just a really weird and mortifying experience.
I can imagine. As someone who has used safety tools before, or has had to use them, thankfully not in a situation exactly like this, but before, it is intense to actually put into practice, but listeners, if you're ever in a game where something like this happens that you are uncomfortable with, it is always okay to say something to the other people who were involved in the scene with you, or to say something to the DM if you're in a situation where you have a DM or a GM. If the rest of your party, if the other players respect you, they will respect the fact that you are uncomfortable with it, and then you can either work around it, or they can take that to a non-public forum. So it's okay to say that you're comfortable with something or uncomfortable with something. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
But yes. Anyway, back to the current thread of conversation.
So yeah, after this very gross scene in multiple contexts happened.
Real quick, do you mean that it is gross for multiple reasons, or you mean this happened more than once?
Well, I mean it is gross for multiple reasons.
Gotcha, okay.
It is gross in hindsight because I'm pretty sure that the person playing the dragon was, if not a minor, then very young.
Mm-hmm.
But also, a gross thing was happening.
Yeah.
With the puke and all of that. Mm-hmm. So Sarah had to step in and be a mediator and be the most mature person in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
which is very different from how I would normally have to play her, but did end up influencing how I played her going forward.
Yeah.
Because that, like, solidified in my mind, like, oh, mm-hmm. in this setting, Sarah is an adult. And a lot yeah. of the people around her, a lot of the people around her are going to be younger than her and are going to be people that, like, she might need to step in and she help. Might need to step in and help and, like,
break it up.
Yeah, break things up, like, be a mediator and, like, try to, like, keep everything on the level.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it is gross on multiple levels, because if you get into MUDs,
yeah.
it is an unfortunately common thing that, like, everyone has these horror stories.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
everyone has been, like, exposed to these sorts of things happen, or had these sorts of things happen to them, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's very unfortunate that that's a thing.
Yeah, and I guess that's something that I am honestly lucky that I have never had to experience myself, because, well, I haven't had to necessarily experience something along those lines. I was in one campaign where there was a sudden, unexpected instance of violence from one of the other player characters, and mm-hmm. there was another one later on from a non-player character who was an ally of the party at the time, and, like, in both of those, I tried to comment, and the rest of the party just accepted it as fine, and then that campaign ended, and they all stopped being friends with me, so in the long run, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, the weird thing about it is that I don't have any of those horror stories that are, like, personal.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, directly involved me. A lot because, like, everyone knew Sarah and Leonia. Yeah. Everyone knew that, like, they were a pair and they were together and that nothing could separate them. So, like,
good.
I never got hit
yes.
on. I never got
good.
Any of that stuff directed towards me. And it was very strange being, like, an observer
mm-hmm.
in those situations because of the context that I found myself in. Because, yeah, like, none of the gross stuff ever got directed at me.
Your
Weirdly,
character.
It didn't insulate Callie in the same way. Yeah, people were still real weird towards Callie.
Huh. Well, I'm sorry for that.
But just for whatever reason, none of that stuff was ever directed at me. So my, like, general experience with playing and with being Sarah in that world was a positive one. Because, mm-hmm. like I talked about earlier, we made a lot of friends, and, like, they did cool things. Like, after one day of adventuring, they were like, okay, surprise, here's your wedding. It's happening now.
Yeah.
And that was a very fun thing to roleplay. That was a very fun experience being
yeah.
in that moment of joy and also doing silly things. Like, I mentioned earlier that Sarah was poison immune in Retro
yeah.
Mud, which means she can't get drunk, which means that at the party, I did a keg stand and emptied the whole keg. Because she just couldn't get drunk.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be a funny thing to do.
Yeah.
And having the opportunity to do things like that and take this, like, more jaded and, like, closed off version of Sarah and do silly things like that was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Having ways to express herself and be cool and integrate into this world full of people who, like, similarly, a lot of the characters in Retro Mud are characters that people have been playing for, like, decades.
Mm-hmm.
And having that experience of like getting integrated into the world and getting integrated into this existing community was really cool.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
And it's also like communities like this, or like the freeform role-playing communities that I first started playing Sarah in, are such a different thing to like making a character for a tabletop campaign.
Yeah.
Or whatever, because like everyone is starting from a different place. It's probably somewhat comparable to like playing in Pathfinder Society or like the official play pickup game sort of things,
mm-hmm.
where like everyone has been playing for like different amounts of time and their characters are at different levels of experience and at different levels of being fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
Being a part of a community like that is interesting, and it comes with its own ups and downs. Adapting a character that like you have made before,
yeah,
to a setting like that comes with a lot of challenges, but also is like a cool way to learn more about your character and like where they might be at different stages in their life, or how they would react to being in a different environment, and how mm-hmm. the differences in settings can change your characters. Because like, even though you're playing as a character who is defined, it helps a lot to be willing to rewrite certain aspects of your character to be more integrated into whatever setting they're coming into.
Yeah. So, real quick, something that you mentioned on the questionnaire that I want real quick to ask about before I forget, is that you mentioned that when asked, what does your character consider themselves an expert at? You said, no matter the setting, Sarah will find herself a bow and will find the way to go as loud as possible with it. I would like to hear, is there a particularly loud or showy stunt of archery that Sarah has done? Because that sounds great to me.
Okay, so yes, I can talk about multiple ways that like Sarah has existed as a character mechanically.
Mm-hmm.
The most obvious one is that, one, I'm a huge fan of Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition. Two, there are a lot of ways to do really stupid things with Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition.
I believe it.
And one of the stupid things that you can do is there are many ways to use a bow as your casting focus.
Okay.
Which means that you can do things like play as a sorcerer who just has all of the biggest, stupidest, loudest spells that you are casting through a bow and arrow, which allows you to do very silly things with them because there are a lot of magic weapon properties that are only available to bows, or like items that specifically make you better at fighting with a bow that will then apply to all of your sorcerer spells.
Okay.
I have played Sarah as a chaos sorcerer, casting through her bow before.
Nice.
Which causes things, or which is essentially just being an explosion mancer. Just
nice.
Like, you have just a whole gaggle of trick arrows that you're using to do the wildest shit possible.
You love to see it.
Your basic attack is an attack that does the most damage that a ranged basic attack can do, and has randomized elements, so you're just having a fun time.
Nice.
Or the other thing that I have done with Sarah is that I made her a monk that uses monk abilities through her bow.
Okay, okay.
Which means that she is holding a bow and looking like an archer, and then she just gets up into your face and kicks you. The bow is a distraction. She is going to kick you in the face and set you on fire while she does it.
Nice.
It is a very fun time to do those sorts of things and to find a level of system mastery where you can make things like that happen. Because, like, in many editions of Dungeons & Dragons, Zen archers are a thing, and you're just sending... you're just shooting a million arrows in a round. But doing that is boring. You are pumping out big numbers, and that's fun for a while, but mm-hmm. you end up doing the exact same thing every round. Yeah. And my constant goal when I'm playing Sarah is to find a way to be effective while not doing that.
Gotcha, okay.
While I'm holding a bow. So I will try to find a way to use a bow and not do archer things. I will try to find a way to use a bow and kick you in the face, stab an arrow into you, and explode your leg off. Which is a thing that Sarah has done. And everyone in the party got real weird about it. I do not understand how that campaign worked. I remember, like, we would be in fights and I would narrate Sarah doing a thing that was big and flashy and full of explosions. And then mm-hmm. everyone in the party would freak out because I narrated her doing a thing that was big and flashy and full of explosions. And I'm like, we're in a fight. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
But it is what it is. So when I was playing Retromud, that was my constant struggle, was that I wanted to find a way to use archery effectively without just spamming the basic archery commands over and over again.
Yeah.
I spent like 3 years trying every single build in the game I could possibly think of to try to make archery work in Retromud in a way that wasn't boring as sin. Because okay. archery could be an actual good thing to do that did a lot of damage per round, which is like how you measured how good you were. But the way to do that was just to spam the same basic skill every single round. Mm-hmm. There was a skill called Deadeye, and you use Deadeye, and it makes you more likely to crit and makes your crits stronger in the next round. So you just hit Deadeye, and every other round your crits are supercharged.
Gotcha, okay.
And that was effective, but it was boring as sin. So I tried almost every single arcane class in the game as an archer.
Mm-hmm.
Which was strange, because Anakim and Retromud are not good at arcane magic.
Because I guess it'd be like divine magic or whatever.
Yeah, they are good at divine magic.
Mm-hmm.
So for the whole time that I was trying this, Sarah actually ended up as not a half angel.
Okay.
After I learned that the basic arrow spells that you get in Archer, one, counted as arcane magic, and two, were not all that good.
Yeah.
We did a roleplay event where Sarah and her wife were adventuring through a chaos portal.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came out on the other side, Sarah was a pixie now. She got shrunk down real small, and now she's a pixie.
Mm-hmm.
To allow me to try out all of the different ways that I could be a magic archer. And the first way that I tried was to be a bard.
Mm-hmm.
And Bard Archer was weird, and I also discovered a lot of things that no one in the game had ever discovered before. So as an Archer Bard, it kind of sucked because Bards, to be at full effectiveness, need to be wielding their instrument.
Yeah.
And you can't wield a lute and a bow at the same time.
This is true, unless you have multiple sets of arms.
There are races that have four arms in Retromud, but both the lute and a bow require them to be wielded in your primary hand along with a secondary hand in Retromud. So that wouldn't work for me. I couldn't turn into a little mushroom creature that has four arms and blast like that. But what I learned was that a lot of the spells that bards get are actually like just fine if you're not wielding your instrument. They just cast a little slower.
Gotcha, okay.
Which turned out to actually be a good thing, because it meant that I could stay in combat longer and be doing my basic attacks for longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I also discovered a thing, which is that a lot of endgame mobs were not immune to sleep.
Yeah.
And the Bard secondary class that I had to go and explore 60% of the universe to find had one of the only player available sleep spells in the game.
It's wild.
So the first thing I would do every time we were fighting a new boss when Sarah was a bard,
mm-hmm.
is I would cast Soliloquy at them and be like, is this boss immune to sleep? And a lot of the time the answer is no. So Sarah would just be riddling a boss with arrows while singing a lullaby to them and making them fall asleep every 10 seconds. Which was a very fun thing to do and was very effective, but I wanted big number. I wanted to make number big and do big attacky spell. So the next thing that I tried was Necromancer. So I made a tiny angel necromancer, and mm-hmm. oh boy, that was great. That worked so well. So necromancer did not require any free hands to use their quick chant, which meant that okay. I could wield a bow and cast at full speed as a necromancer. At level 60, which is where I was at the end of my time as a necromancer, 60 out of 100, I mm-hmm. was keeping pace in damage with max level characters.
Nice.
Because I would just be shooting my bow while my undead was also shooting their bow and tearing the souls out of everything that dared to threaten me. And while I was fighting undead, which would be immune to me tearing their souls out, for some reason, the archer class was also a vampire hunter, so they got one of the strongest holy damage blasts in the game.
Oh boy.
I was able to circumvent the main weakness of necromancer because I had just like a very serviceable holy attack also.
Dang.
Yeah. It was very fun, and it was probably the apex of Sarah being the go loudiest archer that you could ever see. Later on in Retromud, Sarah became a druid after she chilled out a lot. After she laid an egg, and her wife had a kid.
Congratulations!
Yeah! It was a very funny thing to roleplay, and it made a lot of people mad, because I found ancient lore that in the setting Anakim laid eggs that had okay. been mostly dummied out because it made people mad. But I decided to run with it as canon. And so Sarah yeah. laid an egg, and her and her wife had a child, and she majorly chilled out and became a druid. And became nice. The leader of the druids. And then with Sarah as a druid and Leonia as a Viking, they fought their way through every single dungeon in the game. Established themselves as power couples and as the power couple to end all power couples and then peace yeah. out.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's truly legendary.
Yeah. And that's not even talking about the time that we invented industrialization and the assembly line and completely oh, ruined no. the game's economy. Because Sarah wasn't involved in that.
So, have you done anything with Sarah recently, Ray?
Yes. Asterisk.
Yeah?
Aside from just playing her in a couple of other games, I played her in a D&D game that my girlfriend ran that
mm-hmm.
was the place that I talked about with was the thing that I talked about where I played her as a chaos sorcerer and as the mm-hmm. explodey monk at different points in the campaign.
Gotcha, yeah.
My girlfriend and I are currently working on designing a Fire Emblem fan game Ooh. That chronicles Sarah and Leonia's adventures in Retromud.
Nice.
Yeah. Whether it will ever actually come out, I cannot say. We are definitely in the development phase of it. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the design and all the numbers work and all of that stuff while my girlfriend is learning how to code a Fire Emblem fan game.
Oh my god. Yeah. Good luck, Callie.
Yes, good luck to Callie. It's fairly never be me. It's fairly easy because there's very robust both ROM hacking tools and fan game engines that have been made for Fire Emblem.
Okay.
But yeah, that is the thing that we're currently working on that, like, people might be able to see and experience Sarah and Leonia and their story in, because we are both huge fans of Fire Emblem. We want Sarah and Nia and their story to live on somewhat divorced from the context of the kind of crappy place where they existed.
Yeah, I get that.
That is the thing that I'm working on currently. I'm getting all of the design together, and like we are in the like plotting stage where we're deciding like what we're deciding like what needs to be included and how we're going to string everything together. Because in the original context, it's all a bunch of like disconnected areas that were made over a period of 20 plus years. Yeah. By a whole bunch of different people. So having to so we're having to come up with like the connective strings between the little individual stories that we have and the individual areas that we conquered along with friends. It wasn't just me and Callie the whole time. We made a lot of friends and we would bring friends to things. But Callie would be leading the parties and I would be the support. And the way that we handled them and played the game like revolutionized things, and we want that story to be like down more permanently. So we're currently in the stage where we're plotting everything out, deciding what places and events and stuff we want to have represented, while I'm statting up all the characters that will be in your army, because Fire Emblem is a game about numbers.
Yes.
And planning the maps and everything. And then we'll get to the fun part of writing, of actually writing the character interactions and all of the things that are happening.
Nice. Well, I hope that you will keep everyone posted in wherever you want to keep everyone posted about that, because I think that sounds really interesting and I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, if we ever have a demo or anything, I will be posting it around to the appropriate channels on whatever Discords may be local to whoever. to whoever may be listening to this, because as was discussed earlier, I am an internet ghost who just appears on Discord sometimes.
So, real quick, before we talk about where you might like to direct people on the internet, last question for today, Reyna, is why do you love Sarah so much?
I love her so much, like beyond the obvious, which is that like she's been a part of my life for almost 13 years now, over a decade, and like she has existed in so many forms and been just like a constant presence. I love Sarah because Sarah is unbreakable.
Yeah.
The many, many different variations of Sarah have been through a lot. And every time she comes out the other side, still the same person. She can be changed by the events of the things that she's in. But when she comes through the other side, even if she's a little darker or even if she's been matured, she's still the same Pollyanna that she was always. She is a character who sees the best in other people and tries to give the benefit of the doubt. And she's the sort of character who will always reach out a helping hand and try to be the best person that she can possibly be. And I also try to be that sort of person, but it's easier for fictional characters, but it's nice to have fictional characters to look to and to be able to think, well, if I was this character, what would I do? And it's a lot healthier. It's a lot healthier for me to have Sarah, who is a character who is different from me, than an actual self-insert, I think. Because, like, it's so easy to compare yourself to a self-insert. But having that disconnect between, okay, this is a person who is not me, but they have a lot of qualities that I look up to. They have a lot of things that I can think about and, like, try to approach things from a different perspective. But also recognizing that, like, the characters aren't perfect.
Yeah.
Sarah usually has, like, a naivete and, like, is trusting to a fault and has a lot of things that are not ideal, that are flaws. And trying to keep all of that in mind and keep her in a place where she's not perfect, but is still a good person, is what I try to do with her and is the reason why I keep coming back to her, I think.
Yeah, I like that. So thank you so much, Rena, for coming on today to talk about Sarah. I have enjoyed hearing about her, and I am sure that everyone else at home is like, maybe don't try to go start a MUD, but... Or maybe don't try to go join a MUD unless you research it ahead of time and you know that it'll be a good environment for you personally. But yeah, make more characters that help you learn about yourself and inspire you to be a better person.
Yeah.
So where would you like to direct people on the internet? Since, as you previously mentioned, you are a ghost of social media.
I am a social media ghost. Maybe someday the podcast that me and my girlfriend have talked about starting, Girls Love Girls, A Lesbian Guide to Lesbian Media, will be extant and will exist.
Look, y'all want to make it a podcast? I will happily give it a shout out here, and I'm sure you would get quite the following.
Yeah, I read so many lesbian comics. I have a shelf above me that is almost collapsing under the weight of all of them. And my girlfriend does not. And she wants to, but she can't get the attention span to actually read them. So she has suggested to me that we should do a podcast so that she has a deadline and has to consume the media that I recommend to her. Nice. So at some point, perhaps that will exist. For now, however, if you don't already listen to Loser Like Me, go listen to the actual play arc on Loser Like Me that I was a part of. It was very fun, and I love Minuet Holden, and could probably talk about Minuet Holden for another 2 hours at some point.
I will hold you to that. I hope you know that.
I had so many things about Min that didn't make it into that podcast. I know what her hometown was, and I know the fact that it has the only Kroger that I know of in Ohio.
Listeners, if you have listened to Gleidolon, or however we are pronouncing it, I forget. It's been like 3 weeks since we recorded for that. But if you like more, you should let us know, and then perhaps we can make it a thing after we finish the thing we're currently watching for Loser Like Me. So stay tuned.
You know, after Glee is done.
Yeah, because unfortunately we do have a deadline on that one.
Oh.
Or not a deadline, but we do have an end point.
The last thing that I would like to plug is that the second art of Sarah that will be linked in the show notes, that was commissioned from Joe Schwinard, who is the author of my favorite webcomic. His webcomic is called Clowncore, CLOWNCORPS. Okay. And everyone should go read Clowncore.
Nice. I'm going to look that up right what now, if actually.
My Hero Academia had clowns in it? That's the elevator pitch. The first artist goes by a different name now than when I commissioned her and find her. She's on the podcast 6 Feet Under.
Oh, really?
Yeah. on Twitter at Ixnay, IKKSNAY. Also on Tumblr at ixnay.tumblr.com.
Well, I will definitely be crediting them when I post this for the art.
Yeah.
The Home Forward OCs is a part of the Corner Podcast Network. It can be found through Acast and your local podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is Violet by Poddington Bear, courtesy of the Free Music Archives. We can be reached at waywardocpod@gmail.com or at waywardocpod on the derelict rec formerly known as Twitter and Blue Sky. This podcast is partly recorded on the ancestral lands of the Kiakapui, Kaw, Osage, and the Ocheti Shukawan. If you'd like to talk about Wayward or the other Corner Podcast Network shows, we have our own Tumblr at cornerpodcastnetwork.tumblr.com and our own Discord server, the invite to which should be linked in social media, but if that invite isn't working, then let me know and I can get you one set up. I'm always looking for guests to talk about their original characters, so if you or someone you know might be interested, you can either contact me through the show's social media accounts, or there is a Google form, which is the pinned, well, which should be pinned on social media. If not, it's on there somewhere, but it will let you send in ideas about your original characters. And as with all podcasts, it's super helpful if you can subscribe and review us on your listening platform of choice and recommend us to a friend, because that helps us to reach a wider audience and to brighten more people's days. So, thank you all for listening. This has been Home for Weird OCs, and we hope you enjoyed your stay. But enough about cats.
Yeah. Enough about cats. It's time to talk about original characters.
Yes. Hey, everyone. In lieu of a friendly pod promo this episode, and in light of the global strike for Palestine and Gaza, I'd like to recommend some ways that you can help. You can strike from work or attend a protest in your area. You can boycott companies that support the genocide and shop local instead. You can donate to aid groups and funds towards buying eSIM cards for journalists. You can share information about the war on Gaza and or call or contact your political representatives. You can also follow media sources that are discussing the war, like Bisan's and Al Jazeera's reporting, or podcasts like The Electronic Infuitada, Unsettled, and On the Nose. Everything that you can do helps, and we've got to stick together. So thank you, and keep up the good fight.